Sagen Sie jetzt mal bitte Anarchie.
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 Ob geschichtlich oder brandaktuell.
Mit Berichten und Interviews, mit Beiträgen und Collagen
beleuchtet das anarchistische Radio Berlin das Phänomen des Anarchismus.
Viva Anarchie!
The following is an interview with Baruch from Brazil about a book project documenting 20 squads in the city of Belo Horizonte, as well as a connected book tour through Europe starting in April 2024. We also learn more about the different and widespread practices of squatting and direct action in Brazil, as well as the effects of the COVID pandemic, the authoritarian shifts in the country, and how self-organized movements have dealt and still deal with it. All links mentioned in the interview to support the project or to get in touch can be found in the blog entry to the interview on aradio-berlin.org. So, can you introduce yourself to the audience with any mention of groups or associations you want to give?
Hi, my name is Baruch. I'm from Casa Invisível, which is a squat that is turning 11 years old this year. I'm organizing with counterculture, anarchist movements, squatting movement in Brazil for like the last 15 years. And we are like very involved, very much involved with solidarity actions with the squat movement in downtown Belo Horizonte, the very downtown of Belo Horizonte. And there is a very unique independent scene of homeless people getting organized through direct action. And we try our best to support and keep those squads alive. We are in Brazil. The proportions of many things here are very big. We are in a 3 million city, 3 million people city like Belo Horizonte, which is kind of not that big compared to São Paulo, Rio, many other. São Paulo has like 10 in the municipality, 10 million people, but the whole connection of other cities are 20 million people. So, and we have a land struggle that is very particular too compared to what we have seen in other countries. In the most of you, maybe the collective, even the anarchist scenes and probably the audience know the MST, the Landless Workers Movement, which is one of the biggest in the world, which has for now 1.3 million people organized and settled in different lands that are now legalized through occupation and direct action, pressuring the government. So we have similar movements like MTST, the homeless urban movement.
People without a roof.
Yeah, literally. It's like it's very connected to the MST too. And there's very big in other cities. In ours is just starting. But we have like many movements that are squatting in the urban areas, which are like very big too. They organize with 200 families, sometimes 1,000 families. When you have like in downtown, the occupation of buildings with like 15 floors, something like big, like vertically, we do this difference. We talk about a vertical occupation and a horizontal occupation, not mix this with the kind of organizing, but it's like the landscape of the place. Yeah. We have occupation of territories, which mostly in urban territories, which are like open, very open areas where organized social movements, like I can mention for now, MLB, the movement of struggles in the neighborhoods, which is connected to Communist Party, one of the many Communist Party we have. And we can mention also Brigadas Populares, Popular Brigade, if we can translate, which is very known by these occupations. MOB also is another movement, more connected with independent and horizontal politics, and there is a presence of anarchists too. They are also present in these land occupations. which in many cases, like we have Isidora, we have Eliana Silva, we have Paulo Freire, which are like occupations that became neighborhoods. They're so big, people open open streets, they carve the way to build the water connections and electricity and pressure the government to have it, sometimes facing a boycott. Like when the occupation happened, police surround the and form like a siege in the place where people cannot go with food, with bricks to build the houses, or even have the medical assistance denied. We have many examples of people dying, like old people or sick people, or even a house that burned with kids, and the police denied aid to be there and rescue them. And so this is a very intense conflict situation we have in our town. We have the biggest land confrontation, land struggle, I mean, land conflict, which is Isidora, which is the a combination of three squatted areas that host at least 30,000 people in a 10-kilometer square area. And well, in this context, we have like many of these movements moving from the last two decades, from the squatting of vertical structures like buildings in the downtown to these horizontal structures in the neighborhoods, in the borders of the city. It's kind of similar what we see with any favela, but the favelas are like one of those occupations can look like and be similar to the favela, but the favela, which is a concept people know outside Brazil, I guess, are like occupations, like land occupations that happens like illegally and spontaneously and with mutual ways, with a very important network of solidarity of the working class, building their own houses, like in the weekends. We call this autoconstrução, like self-building. I don't know how to translate, but it's like it's the difference between buying something that someone built or paying someone to build. You like your work, and then on the day off, you build your house. And then it happens in both situations, the favelas or the occupations that are like previously organized. But we have this difference. The favelas sometimes take decades to become what they are, to be big and be considered a neighborhood and a favela and have a name. But those occupations, like from in the dead of night, people get there, put like tents, and the next day, like build something with wood. In the next weeks, build something with bricks and resist, and then try to improve that. And there is like meetings, assemblies, deliberations. We have like places like Eliana Silva, which is the neighborhood organized by MLB, which you can see the streets have, they carve the streets, they open the streets. Every street has a sign, which is like red with the name of a street, but the streets has names of like revolutionaries and fighters like Zumbi, Marighella, Che Guevara, I can mention many. So we have this shift where people start to do this organizing to occupy lands which were like easier to fight and resist, easier than be isolated in a building in the downtown. Then we have another shift, like in the after, especially in the 2010, especially after the 2013 uprising, which we saw a very interesting shift also, that horizontal, more direct democracy or horizontal organizing, and some like words like direct action and other stuff became like mainstream. And you have many movements who were with us in the streets using this occupy everything to occupy the parliament, occupy the elections. We have this shift, which is familiar for anyone who follows what happened in Spain with Podemos, or Greece with Syriza after the riots in 2000, we have like similar, and not that big scale, but we have a similar movement here, and we saw many movements, like squatting movements, which is like this huge proportion that we see in Brazil, with this giant movements organizing thousands of people fighting for housing. We have this shift that this political leadership, political leaders of those movements also tried to become politicians. And we saw this transition. And with this transition, we saw many movements being like holded. They were holding up the occupations like, yeah, we don't have to fight that much for this right now. Like even MST, you can see that we don't see any big politician coming from MST, but we can see from MTST, like the one that is Boulos, who is in the parliament right now, trying to be mayor, try to be president, try to be whatever shows up. But we saw many in our town, we saw many people becoming city council members, congressmen, congresswomen, and we saw this. Some of the movements were holding back occupations to channel this energy and resources to elect people. Then we see that during this shift, we didn't see that the quality or the accessibility of housing were improved. People are still homeless. People are still getting homeless. The pandemic made more people homeless. Many families, many parents lost their jobs. Many people who were like poor became homeless, became like lost this little they have. And we saw this. We saw a boom, an explosion of homelessness in our town, in many other big towns in Brazil. And in this context, our struggle, which is like our squat is in downtown, is an old house, is a house from the 30s, and especially old in our town, because Belo Horizonte was the first planned city in Brazil. The next decade after the Republic was declared by the military, by the way, who took the power from the emperor, we had like this idea of modernization and the Republic, and our town was built in this context. The capital of the state.
Do you know more or less which year this was, when this was planned and started the city?
I forgot the date precisely, but in the 1890s.
Yeah, okay.
Our city is 126 years old. I have to do the math.
Yeah, okay.
So our house is 90 years old. So our city is like only 36 years older than the house. We can assume that this was the first edification in this place, which was like a very beautiful forest, the connection of Cerrado and Atlantic Forest was built like in very straight lines, like Manhattan or many other very straight cities. And we have many of these old houses, old edifications listed as historic buildings. So you cannot, like, many of them were destroyed, so you cannot destroy. And the families who doesn't have like money, which probably are also oligarchs or have a heritage of like money, I don't know. they have like lots of those houses, and many of them who didn't became a fancy restaurant or didn't became an office for lawyers or architecture business, they are empty, like waiting to be destroyed by the time, by the rain. Some are like waiting, so they are like used for seasons.
Speculation,
but you cannot destroy many of them. Some are like, people cannot like use it, but you have to invest some money. So we squatted in this context. And when we squatted, we saw, whoa, this was very different. We can squat the house, it's not that big, and do a social center and do things that we saw like in Chile, we saw in other places in Brazil, we saw in Germany, in France, which is not common in Brazil. We have like less than a handful of squads, you know, with this characteristics.
You mean squats that become social centers or?
Yeah, squats that are like houses, not just huge buildings, that became like social centers, not just like an emergency, like we need housing, we do this or we die. So we were like wondering, how can we do more of this? We have this context, we have these old houses, we have this context of a planet city that cannot hold itself together, we have this problem. And during the pandemic, in this context of social movements holding back the squatting strategy, we have like many people getting on the streets, we have more people homeless, we saw direct action emerging spontaneously from those people. Some start to organize and break in those houses. And then we have a kind of explosion of 30 houses. Our street in our corner, we are like in the corner of an avenue and a smaller street. In our corner, we had like 5 squats for a while. Now we have like we have 3 houses, and we have another squat in front of us with many families living there also. And in the 2 blocks from here, we have another squat. 3 blocks, we have another one with a collective kitchen that produces food for other people who are homeless, because they have this logic. When we were on the streets, people from the church, religious organizations, NGOs gave us food. So we as autonomous squatting movement, we do this thing too. Then we support them. So we try to build this connection. When there is a new squat, we use our, like, we have a kind of a history. We have like social media pages, we have connections, we have lawyers, we have a community that support us. So when they have a new occupation, we try to invite people to donate fridge, bed, mattress, anything that you can help a new house. So you like when you have a, I don't know, when you, I don't have the expressions right now, when you do a baby shower, you know, when someone's having a baby or moving to
a squat shower.
We do a squat shower. Yeah, that's the term we use here, like Shaji Okupa Nova. So,
nice.
Yeah, we have this MLP, this is a new movement that was founded by homeless folks, like independent movement that were doing those squats, were like helping those squats, but they don't have a previous organization, different from these other big movements that I mentioned before. They were like more like, there's a new squat here. There's like people that we know that squat at those houses. Let's go them and support them. Let's warn Casa Invisível, which is us, and then we go there and support also, and then we keep together, we exchange contacts, and we try to build this mutual aid network. So that's how I start to realize that all those houses, many of them are from the same decade or early 20th century, and I start to look at it. And once I'm I like to draw, I'm a do-it-yourself artist. I don't have any education for it, but I do something. I start to go with bike with a friend, taking photographs, then transforming it in drawings. I got inspired by a book from São Paulo. A guy in São Paulo made 80 drawings from houses that were in the way of urban speculation and probably gonna be destroyed, and has this history and this heritage of the city being erased to build new buildings with covered with glass where the birds hit and died. So they try to make this portrait for what is going to end one day. And then I was like, well, I can do this with the squats here. I think they have some both memory of what the city used to be, where people were used to live, and now where people are fighting to be. And then we made interview with 9 of those people living in those houses to give us a little bit of a context. And it was a very simple interview. We just asked, where did you live? Where do you live now? And where do you want to live in the future? So we can understand a little bit the trajectory, where they are now, why they're squatting, and what they imagine from their future, for their future. Where they want to go with this struggle they want to be struggling. Some people want to be struggling and helping other people and keep organizing. Some people just want them. I just want to rent or buy my own house and have peace. You know, you have this different context. And so basically that's the the tiny context that we are putting out this book. To have something like that we can show as a portrait of this moment, but also something that is kind of artistic, that can last a little bit. I think that if we do a zine, if we do a newspaper, if we do a documentary, if we do a thing that is more journalistic, it will perish and will be under the poop of some bird or some dog. So we try to do a little bit thing that lasts a little bit. We want to do a book and some posters and banners that can people can carry and remember this moment as a moment of a struggle that even during the pandemic, even during a fascist government, the most military and most reactionary government since our dictatorship, people didn't wait for the election. People didn't wait for a better government. They took action. So that's it.
Okay, thanks a lot for this like really broad contextualization. But maybe to recap, because you're saying, or you painted this picture of like Brazil's like really long and rich history of different kinds of squatting and direct action, self-organization, and then basically zooming into Belo Horizonte as a city and how things developed there. And you and other people, you wrote a book about the situation in your city, and you integrated those paintings also. That's correct, or?
Yeah, these are not actually paintings or like drawings with pen and ink, but and I think it's more useful to reproduce. Like you can do screen printing, engravings, whatever, and it's very more simple. But yeah.
And what is the book called, or what's the title of the book?
It's Casa Encantada, which means enchanted house. We took it from Sindio's song. Sindio's was a anarchist punk band from Spain, which were very related to the squatting movement, and is a expression that we use here in other moments, saying that the occupied house, a squatted house, is an enchanted house, which is the expression they use in their song, that brings this idea that you have a dark and sad place that you bring some enchantment and some happiness, some life to it. So that's like why we wanted to call attention for what is going on. We have like we still have like dozens of empty houses in downtown. We have at least 5,000 people homeless, and we have the proportions are kind of big. In our town, we have 100,000 people living in squats, those kind of squats that I mentioned, territories and also buildings. So we have to enchant, to take those houses and bring some life to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think for people here, it's hard to imagine the scale of self-organization and direct action. And so I think it's also really important to document that this is happening, you know, also not just for Brazil, but also for people in other parts of the world. Although I think it's a really nice initiative. You mentioned the pandemic, and you kind of gave a description of how things were like historically and before the pandemic and how it all developed. And your squad, did it start? It started before the pandemic, right? You said that how many years?
11. We started during the moment of
2013.
Of the uprising 2013 that took the whole country.
Yeah, right. So can you maybe talk a bit about how things changed with the pandemic? I mean, I think everyone who has a little bit of knowledge about what happened in Brazil with the pandemic knows that it was really bad, and that like the official response from the government was horrible, and basically the population suffered a lot and probably still suffers today from it. So maybe can you talk a bit about how it was for you personally and your group and mm-hmm. how you dealt with it? What's your reaction to it?
The first reaction we had is like we got terrified, afraid of dying. Like in Brazil, this idea of like stay at home, stay isolated is very complicated because many people live with many relatives with in the favelas, in the periphery, in the squats, that in the neighborhoods and in the squats, like we are, often we are packed. So you don't have this isolation option. You cannot like isolate yourself and wait for a vaccine or something that took already 2 years, like 2 years of terror. And we saw many people dying, many people being sick and having complications and, you know. Then we suddenly, like very quickly in the first months, we got like very happy and very excited by the solidarity that we could be part of. We saw that we have a very big community that cares about us and the squats and each other. We could organize with other collectives and other movements. Kadu, which is the friend who is doing the pictures of the book, he also worked with an NGO to collect a lot of food baskets. I don't know the name in English, but we call it cesta básica, which is the best basket of everything that basically you need, like flour, rice, beans, oil, many other non-perishable things. And then we collected dozens of it and distributed with our squats. I think I got COVID like right before the vaccine was produced on those activities, but was the only moment I got like in agglomerations with a lot of people because we're taking food to other squats, and they are most of them are much more precarious and populated than ours, and not many people use masks, just us. So we got like very, very happy with those things. And a friend worked in a hospital. We're working with tests of vaccines. We are so afraid that we joined the tests. Like some of us will just get placebo, some will get the real vaccine. We're like the whole squad, the whole collective were there trying to have something. I got lucky, I got the real vaccine. So I got some vaccines before the government put out some, because we have the president, Jair Bolsonaro, as many of the far right right now in the world, like Orban, like Trump, like Milei right now in Argentina, they are, of course, scientific like deniers, you know. They were first saying that there's no virus, that this is just a flu, we're gonna go back in a few weeks. And then they were like always saying that for 2 years and like a real sabotage of any resources, of any research, like scientific research and any collaboration with other countries. They even use Manaus, a city in the north of Brazil, in the heart of Amazon forest. They let them run out of oxygen in the hospitals, and people died. Many people died suffocating without help. Even the government being previously warned about that and did nothing and didn't accept help from Venezuela, which is the Satan communist country for them. And people died because of this. And it was an experiment of mass contamination to see what happens. They were like always doing this theory that I don't know the herd immunization, I think.
Yeah, herd immunity, yeah.
They were like always talking about this. We should like protect the children and the elder, and then you go to work. Don't be afraid of work. Go out and work. They were actually doing an opposite campaign of the states and the mayors. We have this conflict of the bottom of the pyramids of the political structure fighting with the federal government, with the president and the discourse. Like, and even the official, the intelligence agencies and even the army were like, come on, let's vaccine and let's be isolated and let's take care. And they were like, go to the crowd and talk to the people without mask. We go to the rallies and stuff. And they were doing this all the time. And there was this ideological conflict and this strong man attitude that you're invincible, you can solve anything with your gun. I don't take a vaccine, this is for faggots. The president were actually doing speeches like that, saying that vaccines are for queers, whatever, like doing a homophobic connection with anything. So yeah, in the middle of this, we saw collapse of many health systems. We saw people dying from other things because they didn't have a bed in the hospital because they were occupied by that. So it was a terrible moment and a very dark moment where we don't know what's going on. We saw the vaccine happening in other places, and here it took a while. And if it was not by the state governor of São Paulo, which is like a fucking right-wing neoliberal bastard, we were like cheering for them, like, come on, just do a vaccine. People are like dying. And so Bolsonaro were able to bring the far right to even more right, and then he brought the old right-wing neoliberal scum that we have. They were presented as more progressive, so it was beneficial to them. People accept more the right and the proto-fascist right once you saw like a very fascist government in power, and the left movements and the parties were even more disappointing because they didn't use the discourse that we have a fascist regime that is doing a death policy that is going to kill us all, to go to the streets, to riot, to call for a general strike like Argentina is doing right now in the first month of Milei's administration. The left in Brazil didn't call for a single general strike in 4 years of Bolsonaro administration. If it wasn't in our town, if it wasn't for the anti-fascist soccer fans, like from Atlético and later from Cruzeiro and América, other soccer teams here, people wouldn't start to go to the streets. They start to do riots with like 20 people and do videos and doing calls and putting out banners. Then other movements joined it, and it became a kind of a wave that all the other parties were like, no, if we riot now, we do what Bolsonaro wants, and then he will use like martial law or whatever. And people were like, are you mad? What kind of left movement we have that is afraid of riot because riot, it was make things worse. Like it's the most absurd discourse ever. And we see this as Lula and the Workers' Party are trying to go back to the power. And all this is part of a discourse that 2013 was a riot against the costs of transportation of buses, trains in the whole country. It started in Porto Alegre, in the very south of Brazil, then exploded in São Paulo, and it was a fire in every city. We have like every state, we have hundreds of cities rioting in even cities that didn't have a rise in the bus tickets, put down the price because they were afraid of the riot. So all this was used by the Workers' Party as a campaign to say, see what happens when you riot, because in 2016, we were under Dilma administration in 2013, after two terms of Lula, the Workers' Party were in power for 4 terms. Then we have impeachment of Dilma, accused by corruption, which was like a bogus accusation because she did a lot of bad things for social movements, for the forest, for indigenous lands, but what they used to corruption, which is like delay paying some of the budget, which like every president does, they use impeachment. So the left say, we had a coup d'etat because people are rioting 3 years later. They think that 2013 happened, then the next day, impeachment. We have a nationwide movement of far right rising up for 3 years. So all this discourse came back in 2020, 2021 to tell people to not go to the streets. The very own left wing say that. And in Brazil, we have this innovation during the pandemic that is, the left, for the first time, were not trying to co-optate the uprisings or the revolts or the riots. They're like trying to say that don't do that because you will open the gates to the fascism. So people who didn't bind that joined the streets. We did like a lot of blockades to stop the car parades. They did the motorcade. We have Bolsonaro going out with, I don't know if you saw this, going out in every state in Brazil, going in dozens of demonstrations like this with a motorcycle. He was like without a helmet, so you can see that it's him, with hundreds of fancy motorcycle with like businessmen and security, the workers of security, like police and other things, and collectors of guns, all those things, gun collectors, all those doing march very, very much like Mussolini did in Italy in the 30s. So we have this parade happening, and we saw many of them with Bolsonaro and some of them emulating what he did with other people, and we tried to do barricades and blockades to block the way of them, and maybe, and we did some, the anti-fascists did some work to end those early. So, and we had to do this, the anti-fascist movement, the radical and squatting movements and the soccer fans had to do this by themselves without the left, without the social movements connected to the left parties, being it like the Workers' Party, which is like a neoliberal administration with a left heritage, or even the communists and other parties. Some of them were with us, some of them were like, we could do this wide or a conglomeration of radical sections of communist parties, anarchists, anti-fascists, soccer fans, and we could manage to do those actions. Meanwhile, we are doing solidarity actions to build mutual aid networks during the pandemic. So that was the context, and that's how hard it was to be like against the fascist regime and against the conservative left.
Yeah, I mean, that's really amazing. And yeah, again, I think not that easy to imagine being in that situation and still managing to accomplish what you did. Can you maybe talk a bit more about the kinds of solidarity actions that you organized during the pandemic? Like you mentioned the distribution of food. Did the amount of squats increase in that time, or how did you handle the needs of people? Did you just have some initiatives like let's squat a house or let's organize some food, or did people also address the movement in any way, or how did you basically be in touch with the everyday people in the street and the broader population?
Well, we started, well, our squat is a social center. We have a library, we have a movie exhibitions, we have debates, workshops, we have a vegan bar, we have an info shop, we have all those things that means people are visiting us, people are getting together, people are talking, discussing, eating together. When you had the pandemic, we had to close all of this. We were very excited for our 7th anniversary. We're gonna do a very big Latin music party, and we have to cancel. We are like for weeks posting on this, putting banners on the streets, like inviting people. So we had to say, sorry, it's not going to happen. We have a pandemic. We cannot like get together in a room party. So what we saw is that we couldn't be like isolated and stand still, you know. We even took the expressions to mobilize people, saying that we start to organize a campaign that isolation is not inaction. I don't know if there's a word in English like.
No, it makes sense. Yeah.
We are isolated, but we can act together. Then once we're like already together, we organize it between like 10 of us who were like in the house. We started to cook every week, every Thursday. We try to cook 60 or 70 meals for homeless people in our neighborhood. We met other people distributing food. So we try to figure out which is the day they don't do. we have pastoral de rua. Pastoral, I don't know how to translate, but the groups from the Catholic Church. We have a very tradition of, for those who don't know, a very tradition of leftist organizing and school of thought in the Catholic Church here that were persecuted during the military dictatorship. We do many things. We share a lot of actions and spaces with them. They much of them are like, we have the Pastoral da Terra, which is collected connected with the land occupations and the land conflicts. We have Pastoral de Rua, which is connected with the homeless movements and people living on the streets, organizing solidarity and support for them. Then we ask them, we ask the other NGOs and other community associations, and then we saw that Thursday was the best day for us to do action too. We live in a, close to a square called Raul Soares Square, which is very historic too, has like very old buildings and stuff like us, like our house. And then we start to put out kits with soap, masks, condoms, and the meal, and a pamphlet telling people why we're doing this and how to get information of how to get assistance. Because we have like, in Brazil, we have a very good public system, public health system, which is like the result of a very important health workers organizing during the end of the dictatorship. And we have like a pamphlet explain to people how to get like financial aid that was put out by the government, like a kind of a small changes in Bolsa Família, which is the program that were created by Lula. They kept this during Bolsonaro because he saw that he cannot win election creating this thing that in the past he called like a communist treat. And we do this pamphlet so people can access to what is right to them to get. We are also trying to do this by ourselves, because to find these aids, because we're like not working, we're also not able to do what we do usually in the squad. So yeah, every week we put this out. We were like doing this solidarity actions in the neighborhood. So, but we distribute that to workers, to not just the homeless people, but delivery workers, the cleaning, the urban cleaning workers, collecting the trash, and all the people who want it, we make connection. And every week or every month, we are also involved in the distributing food and collecting and distributing food and collecting and distributing other resources. We're getting, we even have one of member of the collective worked in a bakery and who could take the truck from the bakery in the off the clock to distribute fridge, to pick up a bed or an oven or something so we can take to other squats that are like new. So that's what we were building, and also in articulation with this other big movements. We have a connection, a very good connection with MLP, which is this autonomous homeless movements, MLB, which is this huge, one of the biggest, I think the biggest squatting and land struggle movement in our town. We have like solidarity with them. When they go into squat, we go there and help and support. They support us when we riot, or well, not riot, when we rally and go to the to demand the eviction is stopped, that people has access to a grant so they can pay a rent when they are evicted. We have all these social programs that exist, but they don't work if you don't pressure and get and
you have to fight for them.
You have to fight. In Brazil, we have many things. We have rights to many things, but if you don't do a direct action to pressure the government, you don't get access to it. And we saw many weird things, that people to get access to vaccines, to get access to financial aid, they have to present documents. And there was this huge campaign to to recognize, to identify many people. And you saw that about 30 million people in Brazil, Brazil has like 200 million people, 30 million people doesn't have papers. They are like, it's like the illegal immigrations in the United States or the so-called migrant crisis in Europe. We have like dozens of millions of people in Brazil that don't have any documents, any ID, and their parents also don't have, and grandmothers, the grandpas that also don't have. So many people, many children don't even go to the school or don't have like health assistance because they don't exist, like any paper. And this was a kind of a scandal or something that people only realized in during the pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. It's also, you can maybe imagine that for people in Germany, that's completely unthinkable, even though we have, of course, like the migrant situation. But yeah, like here, everything, of course, has to be documented, even if you're a migrant. But how, I'm curious, how did this develop further, like with like in the last 2 years or 3 years with like the pandemic in quotes ending? I mean, you can maybe debate if it ended, but did the kind of activity, did it stay or did it change? Did it get more or less, or how did things develop since like the pandemic slowed down and people say everything is normal again?
Yeah, we in the beginning we were like also using the expression that the problem was the normality, the normal is the problem, right? Yeah. Because the normal, the everyday life in capitalism, the business working as usual, is what brought us to the pandemic, which is a health crisis that make evident other crises that we live in.
Yeah.
Like, well, I was giving you the numbers of people without documents, and I said 200 million people in Brazil, living in Brazil. And I don't know if you, it's like something that people know outside of Brazil, but 35 million people in Brazil doesn't have water, like a tap with water or where they can
running
wash
water.
Their hands. Running water to wash their hands and take a shower. They have to go somewhere to collect with buckets. 35 million people is like 3 Sweden. I don't know how many people is in Germany, but like, it's a nation.
It's half of Germany.
Half of Germany. Can you imagine not having tap water, not having a shower? So how can you say, tell people, wash your hands, stay at home? Like the home is not healthy. The schools doesn't have water. They cannot like flush their toilet, you know? And the normality, the normal life is a problem. So when people were like trying to bring things back to normal, it was like, as I said, in the same time, the Workers' Party were trying to get back in the office, and all this strategy of struggle was like, wait to the election. We're going to let the fascism melt on itself. And we're like, if the fascism government is melting with the doing their shit, it means that we are dying. Their mistakes is our death. You know, we cannot wait. We have to make them melt. So that was the context where people are trying to bring things back to normal. And well, we saw that Trump as very much like Bolsonaro, they are not administrators. They are not good to run a country, to run anything. They like do moral speeches and do panic speeches so they can get power through the fear of other people. So the mess that Bolsonaro did in the politics and economics, even is very much like Trump did. So even the businessmen, even the companies, even many other people were like, okay, maybe Bolsonaro is not the best choice. Maybe not just kill the gay, do not protect indigenous lands, or do not do land reform is not maybe the only thing that we can ask for. We need to do like a diplomacy. You saw Bolsonaro talking shit in every international panel, and people were like, what the hell is that? Even the far right or even the liberal, the neoliberal capitalist leaders in like France or England or even Biden after they got in power were like, what the hell is this guy? So we saw this discourse and we saw this wave of like all the left were combined in like bringing Lula back to bring back the old days, and we were like making fun of it too, because the left was is meant to be like revolutionary. We want a different future. We want a different world. And we saw Trump getting elected with the slogan "Make America Great Again." Try to bring back the golden years after Second World War, industrial workers, the boom of car industry, metal industry, coal industry, which is a lie. You cannot like bring back those industries that went to the global south, to people there, so they can blue collar, well paid workers and support their strongmen. It just doesn't happen. And the it was funny that people were like using actual hats, like red hats, saying "Make Lula president again." Like we made fun of this. We did some articles on this too. Like the left here in Brazil is promising the past. The past is the horizon of a left here. So we cannot like how can we like fight and have a revolutionary discourses that is like, let's break with this dark moment and go to a different future. People are like trying to bring back the social welfare, like kind of broad social welfare that's not similar to what we see in Europe for sure, but this conciliation of classes. We have the industry and the businessmen having their profits and people getting well paid. That's how left the workers' party are. There's no question of land property. There's no question of capitalist exploitation of any of that. So people bought this, and Lula was elected, is the most voted leader in the Brazilian history. He was elected 3 times. Like if you put out like the number, like in millions, is like huge. So he's the most voted ever. And he won for like less than 1%. So we are in a pretty fascist country. And we are not like Argentina or Chile, that where like many people doesn't go to the polls. People like we have legal problems if you don't vote. So many people go to vote. They don't know that you cannot have documents, but their only problem you have is like to pay $3 and legalize your papers again. It's very easy not to vote, but people go to vote a lot, and we have like 100 million people voting, and just 1 million. Lula had 1 million more. So the fascism is in the heart of many people, and all the ministers and many politicians in Bolsonaro administration now become parliament members, mayors, governors. So the lower structure of the politics in Brazil are still full of Bolsonaristas. Bolsonaro is now unable to run election because of many scandals and legal defeats he has. And when Lula won, we saw that picture. Probably you saw Lula going up to the gates of the palace with an indigenous leader, a representative of queer movement, a woman, even the straight dog the first lady adopted was in the way to the palace. We have like black leader movement representative there. People like from all the races, even a disabled person who's very organizing this, the cause of disabled people, everybody were there. And then in the next months, we saw the picture, like going to the palace with indigenous women, disabled people, even a straight dog to like bring the animals to the struggle. And when running in office, only with white men with white hair, like very old white men from the same context ever, same context as usual. So we have like indigenous huge crisis with the Yanomami people being in an actual genocide, not having access to health care. It was a scandal in January, the first month of Lula administration, that people put like attention to this. There was a genocide happening in the middle of Amazon. The Yanomami people were being killed by simple disease because they don't have treatment, because the illegal mining companies that are related to the drug cartels, they're now moving their business to the illegal mining and many other paramilitary organizations doing that with the supervision, with the cooperation of the army, are like taking the land, taking the places where the airplanes land so they can have access to production distributions, or to bring the gold and the material they need to do the illegal mining. So Lula was there, and they were like in a huge campaign to help and stop this genocide. And for now, today, the situation is not better. Mm. The illegal mining are going back. Lula couldn't make the military obey his orders. The military are very ideological, connected with Bolsonaro and Bolsonaro ideas. Bolsonaro, which was a captain of the army, so he started his campaigns in the army rallies and army formations and whatever, in many of the cartels events. So yeah, we saw many things happening. Lula is again putting out a program of acceleration of growth, similar to what they did in the last decade, putting out dams in the middle of Amazon, destroying many communities, many places. Now they're after the COP23, they were like already selling places, spots in the middle of Amazon to explore oil. We have like the police, the military police, the police on the streets in Brazil is a military organization. So we kind of have a police that looks like an army occupation every time. They have like, they support the Workers' Party, and the Justice Minister of Lula supported the unification of policy of the police with more autonomy on their own, so they can judge and have their own legal procedures to not make cops responsible for their crimes. But, so the left is almost more showing that how they are like more able to pass conservative and reactionary laws and measures and policies than the far right. Far right sometimes is like, it's obvious they're going to do this, so we're going to fight them. But if Lula is doing something, if the Workers' Party is doing something very similar, they were like, okay, but they have other things there. We cannot complain right now. We like something that we have to wait and see. And so that's the context. We're like going back to the normal, going back to the police and to the military, having everything they want and being prepared to fight back and to stab the left again in the back and probably try to get back to power.
Yeah.
In the future.
I mean, so many different directions in Brazil with indigenous struggle, land struggle, racism. Yeah, I mean, I think we could probably spend like 3 more hours exploring everything. Maybe we probably have to just, you know, do this again sometime and explore some of these topics. Maybe about the book, you're planning a tour also in Europe, maybe to kind of wrap this up. What's your plan there? Maybe you can talk a bit about your plans for where do you want to go in Europe, and what's the idea of, do you want to present the book or read from the book, or what do you have planned so far?
Yeah, I think that I want to present the book with me and other 2 comrades from our squad. We're going to be in Europe. We're going to try to visit many people that visit us and are inviting us to be there. So we're going to try to cross from Portugal to Greece. We're going to try to visit Spain, France, Germany, Austria, Czech Republic, Slovenia, and try to reach Greece, which is my dream since I was a teenager. I want to visit Greece. I want to see the May Day in Greece. Let's see if you can.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, and I've been in Berlin before playing with my punk rock band, so I really have admiration by the squatting scene there, which like, you know, have decades of experience and influence a lot, has influence in anarchist movements and in imagination of what a movement can have. I even have today the Stress Factor zine I got in 2011. With a lot of a calendar with a lot of activities every day of the week. We like have many things happening in the city. Now it seems that they don't print that anymore. It's just online, right? But I have this with me and I show people, look this. This is our goal. We have to squat enough houses in our town so we can have a calendar like this. So I would be glad to be there like 13 years later presenting a network of squats that we actually did. Of course, it's smaller. Of course, it's more precarious. Of course, it's like third world style. But it's very, I think it's very...
I think it's very inspiring for people here. So I really, yeah, I think you will inspire a lot of people here. So
I'll be glad. And I just want to point out and make sure that people understand that the houses, we're like documenting 20 houses with drawings, pictures, and interviews. And I want people to be clear that this is not even 1% of the squatting movement in our town.
Yeah.
And of course, it's much, much smaller if we try to figure out the squatting movement in Brazil. So all these houses, these 20 houses here with like much less than 100 people living, are like 0.001%, because we, as I say, we have 100,000 people living
crazy
squats of landings and buildings in our town. So we don't have to we have to show this picture, but we don't have. We need people to understand that this is not,
it's a fraction,
even close to the whole picture.
Yeah.
So that's what the next, we have a small article to explain the context or where those 20 houses emerge and how they are like very unique and different. Mm. That's what they are. They are different from the whole movements. That's why I wanted to document them, not because they represent the whole thing.
Yeah.
The whole thing, maybe we can work better in the next publication, then we do another tour, then we do another talk.
Yeah, that sounds nice.
At this moment, I want to do this artistic portrait of this movement that we are part. We are in one of the houses. We have an illustration and an interview with a member of our house, of our squad, Casa Invisível, and I hope it can give people a glimpse of what we do here, and is also a way to build solidarity, to build connections, so we can be like in a mutual aid relation in the future.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, traveling this much is not cheap. Can people support you somehow? What are ways people can, you know, in any way, maybe get in touch or support you?
Well, we have a firefund.net campaign, Casa Encantada. Maybe you can put out the link there.
For sure.
Share with us with the interview, of course. And it's kind of expensive to do this, but as my punk rock school taught me, if you do a tour, if you are like every day going to a different city, you don't depend that much on one person. You can be hosted and have some company and some touring advices for a couple of days with someone. They don't have to spend a week taking care of you, so you can move to the next city. And we can sell books and pay for the tickets or gasoline. In our case, we're going to be buying tickets to buses and trains. So, and we have this Fire Fund campaign so that can help us print the books there, so we don't have to carry books, translated books from Brazil. Of course, they will probably call some attention in their airplanes too. So we support, so we can print, we can do a printing in Europe, and then we can buy some of the tickets that we need. If you can donate any amount, anybody, if you're in a position that you can donate like $10, please do. We're going to be very happy and excited to be able to do this tour. And just remember, we are like in Brazil. We are in exchange, like the how I say that? The currency is terrible.
Yeah.
We are poor here in Brazil. But when we, sometimes I like, what the hell I'm going to do in Europe? Because when you get in Europe, we're like six times more poor. Like our money doesn't worth nothing. Like, so we're going to be like in trouble. Any money that we can save doesn't matter. It's like six times less when you arrive there. So, you know, the minimum wage here is like 1,100 reais, which is like 200 euros. So it's nothing. Like when you get there, you're going to be eating like falafel, whatever. So please help us to at least get to another town.
Yeah, we will definitely put the link to the Firefront in the show notes. If people maybe want to help you, otherwise, do you also look for like translators or some other work people maybe can do for you? Or
no, we want to put the book out in many languages as possible. For now, we have some people working on in English, Spanish, and French.
Okay.
If anyone wants to translate to German, to Greek, to other languages, please contact us. You can share our email there.
Okay. So yeah, we put that also in the show notes. Awesome. All right. So thanks a lot for...
Of course, in the future, we want to share the PDF, a digital version of the book. We want this to be open. So if we have like 100 translations, we can put out without like costs for free on the internet.
Nice. That sounds nice. So people can also print themselves. Cool. All right. I mean, we touched on a lot of topics and we could really go deep into them, but I think to, you know, also respect your time, I would say for now, let's make a cut here. And thank you so much for taking the time and giving us all these insights. And yeah, best of luck for the tour. I hope we can meet up and yeah, maybe also have another interview in person or whatever, you know, maybe document your event in Berlin. And really looking forward.
Yeah, thanks a lot. We're looking forward to meet you all, to visit again the squatting movement and the radical movement in Berlin and Germany. We're going to be in Hamburg too. And thanks a lot. And I would be happy to explore these topics any other moment. Also, we can share articles and things that we wrote and also put out on CrimeThink website. I recommend if you wanted to understand a little bit of the context of all these struggles, I recommend the Brazilian topics on CrimeThink website. We have a bunch of things there in English and German also,
perfect,
other languages. And we'll be happy to keep in touch. And thanks a lot. Thank you very much. I can be here talking forever, but we have to make people excited to see us in person. Yeah. So let's cut.
All right. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
And do this in
Cool.
Thanks a lot.